This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 762 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. In Gaza, Israel has continued to routinely kill and injure Palestinians in spite of the October 10th ceasefire, while desperately needed humanitarian aid, including shelter materials, medicine, basic food items, and supplies for infrastructure repair, remain blocked, and as most of the crossings remain closed. On Wednesday, Israel killed two Palestinians in separate incidents, claiming that they had crossed the so-called yellow line where the Israeli army maintains control. Al Jazeera reported that little information has been given about the location of this line, and it is still being physically marked on the ground, presenting another deadly hazard for Palestinians. Reporter Ibrahim Said documented the invisible partition in northern Gaza, where Palestinians explain that they cannot reach their homes and belongings and are constantly threatened by Israeli snipers and tanks. On Tuesday, November 4th, one Palestinian was killed and another was wounded when an Israeli quadcopter drone opened fire in eastern Gaza City. And another was killed in Jabalia in northern Gaza, again with the Israeli army claiming that they fired on the individual for crossing the so-called yellow line. Palestinians were shot and wounded by Israeli forces on Monday, November 3rd, in southern Gaza. Civil defense spokesperson Mahmoud Bassal said that Israeli forces opened fire on a wedding in the eastern Gaza City neighborhood of Shujaiya that same day, wounding several children, including an 8-year-old girl, Sundus Helles. Bassal said that the attack took place inside the so-called Safe Yellow Line zone in that part of eastern Gaza City, an area designated under the U.S.-brokered ceasefire as a first-phase boundary where Israeli occupation forces were meant to withdraw and halt all aggression. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated this week that since the beginning of the ceasefire, 219 Palestinians have been killed, including 85 children. Across the eastern, northern, and southern parts of the Gaza Strip, beyond where the Israeli army has designated the vague yellow line boundary, Israel has continued to use bombs and airstrikes to evaporate entire blocks and destroy any trace of Palestinian homes, agricultural land, and infrastructure. Euromed said that these actions, quote, suggest Israel is consolidating a new reality, allowing itself to conduct continuous military operations in areas it controls, covering roughly 50% of Gaza, while removing these areas from the ceasefire framework without engaging in combat operations aimed solely at destruction or eliminating future livelihoods. Five Palestinian fishermen were arrested on Tuesday after Israeli gunboats opened fire on their fishing boats just off the Gaza port, quote, forcing fishermen to jump into the water before being bound and arrested, according to a statement by the Union of Agricultural Work Committees. Israel continues to ban Palestinians from fishing despite the ceasefire agreement. Palestinian bodies that were returned to Gaza by Israel this week were so badly decomposed that they were difficult to identify, according to a Gaza Health Ministry official who spoke to Al Jazeera on Wednesday. The official said that one of the returned bodies was missing a head. Bodies have been routinely returned to Gaza with visible signs of field executions and torture. Health officials say efforts to identify the remains have also been hindered because Israel is not allowing DNA testing equipment into Gaza, Al Jazeera noted. The Ministry of Health said that 285 Palestinian bodies have been received since October 10th, but only 84 of those have been identified. Israel continues to use food and healthcare as weapons, 25 months into the genocide and nearly 4 weeks into a so-called ceasefire. The Gaza government media office stated that since October 10th, only 145 trucks on average daily are entering Gaza, which is fewer than one quarter of the agreed-upon minimum of 600 trucks that should be entering in order to meet the basic needs of Palestinians. The media office added that only 10% of the anticipated 1,100 fuel trucks have entered as well, quote, reflecting the continued policy of deliberately restricting and obstructing the vital energy supplies needed to operate hospitals, bakeries, and essential facilities. The Norwegian Refugee Council says that they are one of 9 international humanitarian aid agencies that have faced repeated rejections by Israel, blocking them from bringing in life-saving shelter materials as winter and the rainy season approaches. Quote, since the ceasefire took effect on October 10th, Israeli authorities have rejected 23 requests from 9 aid agencies to bring in urgently needed shelter supplies, such as tents, ceiling and framing kits, bedding, kitchen sets, and blankets, amounting to nearly 4,000 pallets. Humanitarian organizations warn that the window to scale up winterization assistance is closing rapidly, the group said on Wednesday. The Norwegian Refugee Council's regional director, Angelita Kareda, said that, quote, we have a very short chance to protect families from the winter rains and cold. More than 3 weeks into the ceasefire, Gaza should be receiving a surge of shelter materials, but only a fraction of what is needed has entered. The international community must act now to secure swift and unimpeded access. At least 259,000 Palestinian families, more than 1.45 million people, need emergency shelter assistance, the group added. Meanwhile, Israeli forces abducted a worker with UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, on October 30th, while he was working at one of the only 2 crossings that are partially open for humanitarian aid deliveries. Ra'ed Al-Afifi was detained and taken by Israeli forces, and Euromed Human Rights Monitor says that, quote, no information has been provided by Israeli authorities regarding his location or the charges against him. Euromed says that in a related development, the Israeli army, quote, had requested UNICEF to withdraw its trucks and supplies from Kerem Shalom a day before the arrest, and subsequently prevented the entry of aid trucks carrying medical equipment for hospitals in northern Gaza, as well as vaccinations for newborns and nutritional supplements. The targeting of UNICEF, the group says, is part of a broader campaign to restrict United Nations agencies and international humanitarian organizations, aiming to end their presence and operations after they witnessed widespread violations affecting Palestinian civilians during the war and to further deprive the population of livelihoods and essential services in Gaza. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have escalated their attacks and destruction in the northern city of Tulkarem, with extensive bulldozing operations in the Tulkarem refugee camp, which has been under siege for more than 280 days. The Wafa news agency reported that Israeli soldiers have tightened military measures and closed all entrances to the camp, preventing residents from reaching their homes. Barriers, including iron gates and concrete blocks, have been installed in the camp and in the city's neighborhoods adjacent to the camp, and have seized nearby homes and turned them into military bases. Wafa reports that, quote, this escalation comes as the aggression and siege on the nearby Nor Shams camp enters the 270th consecutive day. Local journalist Wafaya Al-Hadi recorded this protest on Wednesday as residents demanded the right to return to their homes and rejected forced displacement. Wafa news agency said that the Israeli soldiers blocked their advance and forced them to disperse at gunpoint. More than 5,000 families have been displaced from Tulkarem and Nor Shams refugee camps in the past 10 months, and more than 600 homes have been destroyed, leaving the camps uninhabitable. Israeli soldiers and settlers carried out nearly 2,400 attacks across the occupied West Bank during the month of October alone, according to statistics from the Colonization and Wall Resistance Commission in Palestine. The army was responsible for nearly 1,600 of the assaults, and settlers carried out nearly 800. Quote, the attacks ranged from direct physical assaults, uprooting of trees, burning of fields, preventing olive pickers from reaching their lands, seizing property, and demolishing homes and agricultural facilities. On the other hand, the occupation forces are closing large areas of land under the pretext of enforcing security, while the colonizers are granted expansion within said lands, the commission stated. Wafa News reported that Jewish Israeli settlers attacked and injured three Palestinians west of Yatta, south of Al-Khalil, on Wednesday. The settlers released their livestock into the fields, damaged crops and fruit trees, and then physically assaulted the residents, leaving three with injuries. Settlers also destroyed olive groves in the village of Turmusaya on Wednesday, setting fires that damaged fruit-bearing trees, causing losses for farmers and threatening this year's olive harvest. The Turmusaya lands and surrounding areas are subjected to frequent and repeated attacks by settlers, especially in recent weeks. And settlers carried out a gruesome attack on sheep owned by Palestinian farmers this past week in the southern West Bank. Footage from a surveillance camera shows nine masked Israeli settlers armed with clubs raiding the property of the Dramin family on the outskirts of the village of Samu in the South Hebron Hills. The video shows the settlers, quote, shattering windshields and torching harvests as three of the men enter the sheep pen and beat lambs in front of the ewes. The security camera filmed one of the settlers throwing lambs onto the floor, throwing concrete blocks at them and beating them as another settler hit the others. Six lambs were killed and four others were severely injured, the Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz reported. Other sources indicated that some of the lambs had their eyes gouged out by the settlers. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight When We Couldn't Offer Family Shelter by Hassan Abu Kamar, writing from Gaza. He writes about trying desperately a couple of months ago to find adequate shelter for 16 of his relatives in the north who decided to try and flee south, as Hassan says, due to the ferocity of Israel's indiscriminate bombing. Quote, our four-room home was already jammed with our family of six, plus my aunt, her husband, and their two sons, one with his wife and three daughters. They pleaded with my father to find them an apartment or a roof or any piece of land where they could pitch their tents. The situation here is so dangerous, my cousin Maisara said. We don't want to die. My father asked them to wait until the end of the day when he tried to find a solution. As he hung up, I sprang to my feet. How? There's absolutely no place, I asked in disbelief. What could we do? Abandon them and watch them die? My father replied in anger, exasperated from the trying circumstances that were visited upon us. In November 2023, my cousin's home was bombed while they were inside. 16 of my cousins were killed, and many others were injured. This time we could lose them all if we did nothing. We needed to find them a place. My brother Hussein and I searched the streets of Nuseirat for any place, a task that felt like searching for a needle in a haystack. Hussein also made calls and checked social media, but prices were unimaginable. My brother and I returned home that evening after almost 4 hours of searching Nuseirat and then nearby Al-Zuwaida, finding nothing but prices soaring beyond reason. I wished to die rather than to deliver the bitter truth. We couldn't find any place. I told my father that he could offer our cousins my room instead of simply saying there was nowhere for them to go. He called our cousins with the speakerphone on and explained that we couldn't find a place. Then he offered, you can have a room, a bathroom, and use our kitchen to cook. Some of them laughed, not out of amusement, but despair. They thanked my father and declined the offer. Then they pondered among themselves before telling my father that they decided to stay in northern Gaza. not as an act of resilience, but because there's no place in the south. We prefer to die in an airstrike than from famine, Maisara said. When a ceasefire was announced on October 9th, we contacted our cousins immediately. Alhamdulillah, all of this has ended, Maisara said. His previously tense and strained voice now carried relief, but cautious optimism. For an entire month, we didn't leave the boundaries of our street out of fear. My father, our family, and I felt an overwhelming sense of relief as a weight had been lifted off our shoulders. My cousins are safe, for now, at least, but remain deeply anxious, unsure of whether Israel will once again break the ceasefire. Those are excerpts from When We Couldn't Offer Family Shelter by Hassan Abu Qamar, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. Students at Al-Azhar University in Gaza City are registering for classes after 2 years of trying to complete their education while also trying to survive a genocide. In a short video produced by Middle East Eye, one student says that she hopes to finally obtain her right to education, including by taking in-person classes. Mohammed Shabir, a university administrator, says that in the third year of this war, they were happily surprised that the number of student registrants was higher than any year before. He says, quote, "This demonstrates that there is living, undying Palestinian will in the hearts of all of our students."
أتمنى أن أخذ حقوقي في التعليم وأن تستمر الجامعة في التعليم الوجاهي وأن أستمر لما كنت عليه ما قبل الحرب. هذه أبسط حقوقي.
الجامعة تستقبل يعني دائما فبداية كل عام دراسي قبل الحرب ما يقارب 4000 طالب. المفاجأة السارة أننا في هذه السنة وفي السنة الثالثة للحرب وجدنا أن العدد أكبر من ذلك بكثير، وهو إن دل فإنما يدل على أن هناك إرادة فلسطينية حية لا تموت في قلب وجدان كل طلبتنا الأعزاء.
مصرين على إنه إحنا نتعلم ونحاول نسمع شوية، يعني نعيد شوية من حياتنا اليديمة، وإن شاء الله يعني بيصير خير وبترجع غزة زي ما كانت.
شعور الآن وأنا اليوم في داخل جامعة ميدان جامعة الأزهر شعور جدا رائع، شعور بالفخر، شعور تحقق جزء من الحلم.
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.